Hi, everyone. Welcome to Josh Nason's Punch-Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. I'm Josh Nason, writer, editor, and podcaster for the website. Hope you guys are doing well. Fun show this week coming off the huge, mega, super-tastic, make up that word, event that was Mayweather-McGregor this past Saturday night. Obviously, Conor McGregor coming out on the losing end of things, but had a great accounting of himself and helping to talk about this and kind of where we go next, both for really for boxing and MMA, is a guy that knows both worlds very well and also the world of pro wrestling. His name is Tom Gervasi. You probably heard of him before. He's done some work for our site, obviously a longtime boxing writer, and also the editorial director for the UFC. So who better to talk to about all this stuff than Tom? So Tom and I talk for about an hour, a little over an hour, and on a variety of topics. Really talking about Mayweather McGregor, and obviously a lot. We started off about 20 minutes talking about Tom's background, how he kind of came through the boxing media, and then got to UFC, and some fun stories in there about really just his rise, and also where pro wrestling came in to the equation as well. Then the rest of the conversation is all about Mayweather McGregor, and not so much obviously technical, but kind of like where do we go from here? The accounting that Conor made of himself. How does that play into things? Where do we see him going next, if we see him going anywhere at all? And, kind of just how the boxing media treated this whole thing as well. So a fascinating conversation if you're into this type of stuff. We say goodbye to Mayweather McGregor. It's in the rearview mirror waving goodbye, but let's take one last spin around with it. This week on Josh Nason's Punch-Out with the one and only Tom Gervasi. Well, this week we have a much-anticipated interview, one that I've been working on, I'd say, for probably about 15 years. And no, just kidding. For a few months, but we're glad we're actually able to do it this week because it's perfect timing because we just, in case you didn't know, we just had a big boxing event happen this past weekend involving a major UFC star, all types of news going on in pro graps and wrestling, and our guest is well-versed in everything. He is someone that actually has been a part of our site before, both as a subscriber and contributor, contributing some couple pieces this year in various indie wrestlers and some stuff you read in the front page. He is obviously he writes for Zufa. He's the editorial director there. He writes for Boxing Scene. He even writes about roller derby. This guy does everything, even a little bit of music stuff too. Tom Gervasi is joining us this week, and Tom will we'll start out with the. The really hard questions. How's your fantasy football drafts going?
Man, if I took up another sport, my wife would divorce me. I think at this point, my football is limited to Madden, which is still sitting in the plastic as we speak.
Well, it's been a very busy year, so don't blame me. I mean, especially with all the stuff that you cover and follow and do all that, it's it must have a pretty packed schedule.
Yeah, it's. It's getting crazier as it goes on. It just seems like, with the UFC stuff, when I started with Zufa in 2005, we did 10 shows a year. In July, we did 9 shows, with the Dana Contender Series. So there were 9 shows just in July. So, yeah, time off is at a premium these days.
So let's kind of, I guess, start there because, as I mentioned, your name has been one that, I have known for a while. And obviously you're kind of well connected with guys. I mean, I kind of first got to know you through or your name through guys like Oliver Kopp and Kevin Ioli and, of course, our own, Dave Meltzer and just kind of this gang. And then obviously you did some working for us and writing. How did you come to be in this whole kind of crazy combat sports writing world? I guess let's start there.
I was working in maintenance.
Okay. Always a great place to start.
That's how it was going to start. I was working in maintenance after college. I had graduated with a degree in what they used to call athletic administration, but thankfully they changed it to sports management because before everyone thought I was going to school to become a gym teacher. So graduated with a degree, did my last semester's internship with the then New Jersey Nets, didn't get a job after that, wrecked my car, so I needed to get a job fast. So I wound up cleaning toilets for the next 10 years. Along that road, I said, man, there's got to be more than this. So just started writing. I used to write for a spot that was called the Cyber Boxing Zone. And this had to be around 96, 97. And as that goes on, you know, you meet people. And I remember trying to get a interview with Shane Mosley, who was lightweight champion at the time. And I contacted his promoter, Tom Loeffler, who is now the promoter of Gennady Golovkin. Mm-hmm. And I kept badgering him. You know, remember, this is 97. The internet is nothing at the time. And, you know, internet sites would even get rejected outright for boxing events. It was like, bah, this internet stuff won't last.
Right.
And then finally, Tom breaks down and he puts me in touch with Shane's publicist, Norm Horton. And me and Norm get to talking, and he's like, yeah, I'm trying to get Shane's name out there. I said, oh, you guys should, you know, start a website. He goes, do you know how to make one? I was like, yeah, I know how to make one. So I got that job. I didn't know how to make a website. I got Microsoft Front Page and made a website, poorly, might I add. But Shane liked it. Wound up doing his website, the late Johnny Tapia's, David Reed. So that was a nice little side gig. Kind of got my foot in the door in boxing. All the while I'm writing. And one day, one of the guys who we worked with on the site, his name was Gary Randall, and this is now in 2000, he calls me up and actually calls my house. My wife picks up and, you know, gives him my work number. He calls up and he goes, well, how much do you make over there? So I tell him, and he goes, I'll give you $10,000 more and you can work from home. And this was for the site that he ran, which is called houseofboxing.com. Him and Doug Fisher were the owners. They got bought out by Mark Roberts, you know, who was the manager of Shannon Briggs. And they got $1 million in, you know, cash and stock in Roberts' firm and the whole deal. So they had a lot of money. This is the dot-com boom era.
Yeah.
And they had a lot of money to throw around. They brought in Mike Katz, who was the dean of American boxing writers. He was writing for the Daily News, New York Daily News at the time. They brought in Tom Hauser, who was Muhammad Ali's biographer. And they brought in little old me to edit Katz. One thing leads to another. I start writing there, and boom, then I'm in. That's the boxing end of it. Over the course of this, also in 2000, Gary Randall, I just mentioned, is good friends with Bruce Buffer. Bruce wants to put up some content on his website, which was thebufferzone.net at the time. And Gary's like, oh, Tom likes UFC, you know, because I'd watched UFC from the beginning. My father had gotten me into it. And he's like, oh, yeah, Tom likes UFC. Why don't you talk to him? So Bruce obviously had all the connections. And we talk, and I'm going to contribute some stuff for the site. And first interview he gives me is Kevin Randleman. And this is before, I believe, it was UFC 28 when he fought Couture and lost the title. And Kevin wasn't on the best of terms with SEG at the time. And he gives me this interview, and he tells me he's not talking to anybody else. I'm the only one he's talking to, and it's because of Bruce and this and that. And he was just Kevin Randleman. And I'm like, wow, if they're all like this, I will stay in MMA forever. Mm. And that was it. It went from there. It's been a crazy ride since then, but, you know, that's the origin story.
I like it. I like it. So that brings us to current day. So you are, and I'm going by the, you know, Twitter bio here. So editorial director for Zuffa and the UFC. So what does that entail?
So 2005, I was writing for InsideFighting.com at the time. And my editor there, Mike DeSanto, who went on to write for me at UFC.com for a while, he calls me up and he's like, it was a Saturday night. It was around Halloween. And he says, Dana wants your phone number. Is it cool for me to give it to him? I was like, yeah. So Dana calls, and they want an editor for the website because UFC.com was bad. in the early Zuffa days, it was bad. There was nothing pretty much of worth on that. You know, they would just put press releases up there. So, he wants an editor for the website. And I'm like, all right, I'm in. And that went from there. What it was originally, I remember asking Dana, what am I required to do, for the website? He's like, at least one thing a day. And if you think, from then in 2005 to now.
My God.
there's like, 10 things a day going up on that site and videos and podcasts and all this stuff. So it was a lot different from, I've got one story I have to write today. But it went from that, from just doing the content for the site. It's added on over the years. I do the TOPS cards, the event programs, the combo scripts, which is the pre-fight vignettes that go up before the guys walk into the ring, the bios for the fighters. It's a lot of stuff, a lot more than 2005.
Yeah.
But I managed to plug along.
That's great. Yeah, that's it's interesting. I think from having worked in pro sports myself, working in pro hockey for 7 years, 6 or 7 seasons, I did a lot of that. Wrote it. I think that people don't realize how much writing has to be done for things like, just the in-game, pre-game announcements and in-game announcements and things like the media guide and things like, programs and all these things. Like, somebody has to write all that stuff, and somebody with that has a clue. It can't just be outsourced to anyone. So, I mean, that's I think it's interesting. You fill in some of the gaps with not only kind of the baseline content, but also just these things that people don't even think that somebody has to write. That just doesn't write itself.
Yeah, it's one of those things. A lot of people think that we in the business, we show up on fight night, watch the fights, and boom, where's the after party?
Right.
And it's not like that. I used to do a lot of traveling. I haven't done in the last few years because we've just had too many shows. But when I was doing 75 to 90,000 miles a year, people would be like, oh, you're going to Vegas? Great. And for the first, I'd say, 3 or 4 years, I never even saw the Strip. I never even knew what the Vegas Strip looked like. The only time, and like I said, it had to be 3 or 4 years in, I had accumulated enough miles. I brought my wife and daughter out there. There was, it was the rematch between Silva and Sonnen that weekend. And I finally got to see the Strip. I'm like, oh, wow, this is pretty cool. look, I'm going to the Venetian. There's a gondola. I'm going to ride in that thing. I never saw it before that because you get on site and, if the fight was in Mandalay Bay or MGM Grand, you're in the host hotel. The arena's in there. You don't need to leave.
Yeah.
You could stay there and do your work and run back and forth to everything, and it's all in that one spot. I'm not complaining, and people around me will know that I'm not afraid of complaining, but I'm not complaining, but it's definitely not what a lot of people think it is.
Yeah, I get the same thing, too, where, people say, oh, that must be so cool working in sports, and it is. There are certain things that you get to see and that you get to hear about and get advance notice of, and kind of you're on the inside, and obviously stuff you'll never say, or just there's things that just carnal knowledge that you have, and you're part of the show. But there is that thing where you show up at a certain time in the morning and you leave at a certain time at night, and a lot of holidays you miss and all that. I think for all of the people out in front of the cameras and all of the fighters themselves and all this stuff, there's for everyone that you see, there's, 20 times that behind the scenes that make this whole thing work and make this whole thing run, and they're often the unsung heroes. So yeah, I'd definitely count you among them for sure.
Well, it's funny, to this day, whenever I'll go out, I'll have my laptop in the car. I'm not going to tell anyone what kind of car it is. I don't want them stealing my laptop. But I will go out and I'll have the laptop in the car. These days, if I just went out with the phone, it's possible. Phones have gotten to the point where, you know, I could update the website if necessary off my phone. But there was, I think it was UFC 79, and Sarah was supposed to fight Hughes. And it was Christmas night. It was either Christmas night or Christmas Eve night. And word came out that Sarah was hurt. GSP was jumping in. I get a call from Dana. He's like, all right, you know, this is going on. We need you to write something up. He goes, St. Pierre's waiting, you know, to give you a quote. And I'm sitting. I had just left my sister's house in Jersey. I'm sitting with my wife in a parking lot in Jersey talking to GSP and putting on speaker and taking notes, you know, because I couldn't tape off the phone, and writing that thing up in the car. That was one of the memories that you hate when it happened, but looking back, it's kind of funny that that's how I spent Christmas night.
That's how a 24/7 sport works. Has there been one story throughout the years that when you got the call that this has happened, that you were like, in any sport, there's always going to be one, you're like, oh, this is big, this is great. Has there been one where you were like, holy shit, this is huge?
I don't know. I'm running, as you're asking me the question, I'm like running it through my head.
Well, actually, let me.
I think buying Pride was big.
Yeah.
I don't remember how that whole thing went down, but I remember saying like, "Wow, this is the coolest thing ever."
Yep.
Because you know, I think any of us who go back in MMA, we all love Pride. It's kind of like, and I'm sure we'll get into the whole boxing versus MMA debate. There was always that Pride versus UFC debate, mm-hmm. and I feel the same way about that as I feel about the boxing MMA battle, is that why must I choose? Why can't I watch both and enjoy both? So that was a big one. Lesnar was big, and that was the first signing of Lesnar was big because we were in Cincinnati. I think it was the Franklin Silva rematch. And we're there, and we get the word, and Jen Wenk, who was head of PR at the time, she tells me, yeah, we're going to announce this tonight. Brock and his lawyer are going to be at this hotel a few blocks away from the host hotel. She goes, let's go over there and get some quotes from him for the press release. And I knew a bit about Lesnar, but not the, you know, the full story and the nuts and bolts. I knew he was a big guy, but you know, I didn't have his measurements or anything like that. And I remember seeing somewhere, someone listed him at 6 feet tall. And I'm 6 feet tall. So we go into this hotel, and his lawyer's there, and Brock's there, and, you know, we introduce ourselves. And Brock stands up, and it was like he kept going. It's yeah. Like he stood up, and he just kept going into the sky. And the first thing I said to him was, you're not 6 feet tall. And he's like, nope. But that was big. And it was great because no one knew it. There was no, I know social media wasn't as crazy, if it even existed back then. But it wasn't one of those things where it was leaking out, where, you know, either someone in the know or someone who came out of nowhere, you know, put a tweet up and said, hey, Lesnar signed with UFC. It wasn't like that. No one knew about it until it happened. And so that's cool. When you're able to hold something until you're ready to get it out there, that's pretty cool, you know, from the promoter's point of view. So that was pretty big.
It becomes, like, rare and rare, especially these days of social and people leaking stuff and all that. But I wanted to ask about you mentioned Brock is pro wrestling and what role that has played in your life and how you felt, if it's been a lifelong fan, has it come in certain part of your life, and obviously, you know, people that go to your Twitter profile see you in a great picture of you in the Nature Boy style and profile, as always. And again, we mentioned you've done some stuff for our site. So how did pro wrestling get into your DNA?
Well, I got to tell you the Flair story first.
Yes.
I think it was a show in Atlanta, and I got in the day before the show, or the day of the show, one of the two. It was close to the show, but everyone else had gotten there on the Monday or Tuesday of fight week. And or actually, I think it was a weekday show. So whatever 4 or 5 days before the show was, they got in at that time. And everyone met up with Ric Flair. I think Ric was living in that hotel. And everyone's putting up pictures with Ric Flair. And I'm not there. And I'm the most jealous guy in the world that everyone is meeting Ric Flair except me. So I try to put it out of my head. I go to Atlanta. I check in. I'm going to go grab a bite to eat for breakfast. And who do I see walking into the bathroom but Ric Flair? And I'm like, well, that would be kind of awkward to follow him into the bathroom. I'll just wait for him. So I waited for him to come out of the bathroom before introducing myself and getting that picture. But, yeah, I wasn't letting him go that day. But I think a lot of people may go through this whole thing with wrestling in that they're diehard fans as kids. They lose touch with it as they get a little older, and then they get back in. That's basically my road there. When I was a kid, and you know, I don't even know if we're putting a time on this, but Bob Backlund was champion.
All right.
when I was a diehard fan. They used to have this thing where you could subscribe and get, they used to have monthly shows at Madison Square Garden. And I used to subscribe, or my father subscribed for me, to get the programs. So I would get the event programs every month from these shows. And we went to a couple of shows at the Garden. My grandmother was you ever see those cartoons where they make fun of the little old lady who loves wrestling?
Yes.
That was my grandmother. She was the prototype. But she loved it, and she thought it was real. You know, she would jump up when someone was about to get pinned and get all disappointed where they kick out at two. But we used to go to, you know, a couple matches. I remember they had one at the local high school in Brooklyn, and I got to shake hands with Johnny Rods, which was the greatest moment of my life at that point. And I loved it, but I lost touch with it over the years. And it's just been, you mentioned Oliver Kopp before. Ant Evans is another one, you know, with the UFC, diehard wrestling guys. And I think they dragged me back in, not physically, but I think by osmosis, them talking about it brought me back in. So in the last few years, I've started to get deeper into it again. But yeah, it's something that's been a part of my life in one way, shape, or form for a while. What recently got me all amped up again, and that's, you know, I've been writing this stuff for The Observer, is you know, the indie shows. To me, it fascinates me that not only are these guys going out there and, you know, risking life and limb and, you know, doing all these crazy maneuvers in basically what are basketball gyms or, you know, little halls, but the traveling that these guys do. They'll do, you know, 5 matches over the course of 2 or 3 days, and they're not making any money, but, man, they got that dream and that drive. And there's something about that that makes me respect the hell out of all these guys who are and gals who are getting in there and doing it. They put on great shows. I saw the one that got me, actually it was the first story I wrote for the Observer site. I saw this Lucha Libre show in Queens, and the crowd was into it from the start. And, of course, it's a Lucha Libre show. It's in the middle of Queens, and the whole crowd is predominantly Latino and Mexican. And so what do? The bad guy is a guy named El Gringo Loco. All right? So this poor guy, and I spoke to the promoter later, and he says, this kid he goes by the name Jersey Kid, you know, when he's not El Gringo Loco. He was like, I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be the guy everyone hates. He's like, well, we need you, buddy. We need you to step up.
Yeah.
So he's El Gringo Loco. He cheats. He pins the local hero. And all of a sudden, beer cans start flying into the ring. I was there with my wife and my nephew. My wife and nephew are like, whoa, what's going on here? And I was just loving it, mainly because I didn't get hit. But still, I'm watching people so into this that they would go to the lengths of throwing away full cans of beer at the ring. And then later, it was Phoenix and Pentagon Jr. That was the main event. Mm. And these guys put on such a great show. You're in this small club, and they're putting on a show that you could have seen in an arena somewhere. When it was over, boom, things start flying into the ring again. And I'm like, oh, geez, here comes the beer. And it's money. Mm. They were throwing bills. They were rolling up bills and throwing them into the ring. That sold me that night. And you see the looks on the faces of kids, and you say, wow, this is when you catch them. This is when you get them in wrestling's grip, and you will never lose them. Those kids, 7, 8, 10 years old, they will be wrestling fans for life. You can see in their eyes, and that's where you get them. To me, that's the whole essence of pro wrestling right there.
Well, speaking of somebody that has all of us in his grip, guy that fought this past weekend, someone you know. And
Miguel Cotto?
Yes, that's really what I wanted to talk about, was the Cotto fight that for some reason ran up against Mayweather-McGregor, the monstrosity. We're recording this on Tuesday night, so we're a few days past it, and it seems like everyone's kind of had their say. And you know, I would agree with the consensus that I thought McGregor outdid himself, but he performed better than I gave him credit for. I think I was going in this being realistic that it was if you didn't have the people, the players involved, and you didn't know who was involved, but someone put two pieces of paper in front of you and said, this person is going to fight this person, who would you favor? And you would look to the person that is obviously the one that had the 49-0 record and the longevity in sport versus person that never professionally boxed before. However, I thought McGregor had a great accounting of himself. I thought he didn't embarrass himself at all. He rose to the occasion. He didn't win. Ended up getting beat by TKO. To me, it wasn't a controversial stoppage or anything like that. And I think people came out of it satisfied. And I think it turned out to be, I think pretty good, all things considered. It wasn't, a classic by any means. And I'm sure some of the boxing people, the hardcores, are probably like, why'd this need to happen? And, kind of maybe, rolling their eyes a little bit. But, I think all in all, for the spectacle of the night, what it was, my takeaway is that it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. And now we can kind of move on from it. What did you think come late Saturday night, early Sunday morning?
Josh, you didn't need to speak to me because your pre-fight, your fight, and your post-fight take is exactly how I feel. Going into the fight, I think anyone who's a rational person looked at that fight on paper and say, well, how does Conor win? How is Conor even competitive in this? But having covered the guy since he's been in the UFC, this guy's always coming up with something where you're like, well, maybe. So I was kind of torn with that, with the rational side of me saying, no way, no chance. And the other side of me, the McGregor side of me, saying, well, geez, he's kind of shocked me before. I didn't see him getting rid of Jose Aldo in 13 seconds. Maybe, just maybe. But if pressed to make a pick, I would have said Mayweather by decision. And what I told people was, well, Floyd's not going to change his spots. He is who he is at this point in his career. He's not going to go out. He's saying, oh, yeah, this fight's not going to go the distance. Hey, you're selling a fight. I thought he'd outbox Conor, take an easy decision, and you know, McGregor gets to stay on his feet for 12 rounds and have bragging rights. But when the fight came, I must say I was pleasantly surprised with the way it ended in terms of everyone wins, I think. Mayweather gets his 15-0. The fans got a good fight. And McGregor shut up a lot of people with his performance. That was my opinion as I went to bed Saturday night / Sunday morning. When I woke up on Sunday, I went on the internet, and then I got right off because it kind of soured my opinion on what just happened. Well, I shouldn't even say my opinion because it was what I watched.
Yeah.
It soured it because, and I've been in boxing, like you heard, I've been in boxing for 20 years. It's still a big part of my life, you know, both professionally and personally. But to see the quote-unquote purists saying, oh, Floyd let him last 10 rounds. Oh, Floyd, you know, carried him for 10 rounds. To me, that's not only an insult to McGregor and his performance, but it's an insult to Floyd as well. Floyd's been in this business for a lot of years. You don't let someone punch you if you don't have to. Can I agree with them saying he took a few rounds to feel McGregor out, figure him out, and then start implementing his game plan? Yeah, I'll go along with that. But don't denigrate what McGregor did. McGregor won, you know, a lot of rounds in that fight. He landed a lot of punches. After 9 rounds, I had Floyd up by a round. Was he coming on? Yeah. Was he probably going to, you know, sweep those final rounds the way he was coming on if it went the distance? Yeah. But if the fight ended after 9 rounds, Floyd would have won a close decision. I don't think the purists have been able to let this one go. Mm. And I don't know why. It baffles me. We've seen bad fights in boxing. We've seen fights that should not have happened for whatever reason. We've seen mismatches. This was not a mismatch on Saturday night. And I don't know why, and it goes back. I remember when, this is before I was with the UFC, I was covering this for, you know, Bruce's site. When Zuffa brought in Carmen Electra as, you know, a spokesperson, it was before Tito fought Elvis Sinisek. And at a big press conference, I think it was either the ESPN Zone or All-Star Cafe, one of those chains. And they had the press conference, and, you know, you got to speak to everybody and the whole thing and meet Dane and Lorenzo and all those guys. And remember one of the boxing guys coming up to me, he goes, that was 2 hours of my life I'll never get back. I've had guys sat next to me, you know, the big sports columnists of whatever particular city we were in, and they would sit him next to me so I could let him know, you know, when a guy was going for an armbar, let him know what was going on.
Yeah.
And these guys, and it wasn't just one, it would be several at times, you know, the majority were great. They were open-minded and wanted to learn. But the rest of them, just crying all night. Oh, I got to cover this, this and that. And there's always been that bias from boxing to MMA, and I don't understand it. Is MMA for everybody? No, absolutely not. But you know what? Golf ain't for me. Well, actually, let me take that back. I went to Top Golf a couple of times, and I'm kind of getting into it. Let's say water polo. Water polo is not for me. But I'm not going to kill you for enjoying it. You know, if a water polo guy wanted to go, you know, try to play hockey or something, hey, if he could hang, then good for him, and I embrace it. Conor McGregor went in there with one of the best, if not the best, of this era, and he put up a fight for 10 rounds. He didn't last 10 rounds. He didn't get carried for 10 rounds. He fought for 10 rounds. Hey, he ran out of gas. He got stopped. No complaints from me.
Yeah.
But the guy went in there. He took the shot. You know, yeah. And there are a lot of folks in this world, not just in the boxing business, but in this world who've never even got off their chair. So I don't see how you attack a guy for taking that shot.
Yeah, I never, you know, going to this, I never really kind of thought the whole, I understood promotionally into the mainstream sports fan, the whole kind of boxing versus MMA thing that never was like outwardly promoted, but definitely was kind of just this underlying thing that was happening, this kind of these two worlds coming together. I saw it really as these two combat sports stars, and one has just, you know, risen from basically relative obscurity in 4 years from, you know, opening up, you know, not even being in the UFC and obviously just, you know, getting that opportunity like everyone else did in the middle of the card. And now rising to a spot where he's going to make, you know, $100 million plus for a fight against in a sport that he hasn't competed in. And, yeah. and with a guy that's won two titles versus this guy who is a controversial figure in his sport, but undoubtedly one of the smartest businessmen in his sport and in sports in general, crossing the $1 billion mark in, I mean, that's incredible. So I think the frustration maybe that some boxing people has is that maybe one that, you know, maybe frustration's kind of like that Floyd didn't take him out earlier and kind of almost like, you know, save the sanctity of the sport, if you want to kind of believe that, or that, you know, they're just, they're frustrated that, you know, UFC kind of just goes on and there's this full slate of cards and just that it's a little bit more better organized, you know, but you still have these 10, I mean, boxing still has a lot to be happy about. They have this amazing fight coming up in a couple of weeks and it's going to capture our imagination again. Both sports can coexist and fans can coexist and people that can watch both, they can watch one or either, or they can watch kickboxing and say to hell with both these sports. There's enough for everyone. And yeah, I don't know. Yeah, you're right. I don't understand the need to declare a winner. I think everyone won. It was a good fight. Now, ultimately, if people paying $100 were happy, then, you know, I think that's a good thing.
Let me tell you, like I said, 2 decades in boxing. I'm a diehard. You may even want to call me a purist. But here's what I have to say to the boxing media, of which I am a part of, and the boxing fans who had such an issue with not only McGregor coming over, but the UFC and mixed martial arts as a whole. You want to do something? You want to, quote-unquote, fight back? How about you guys go to club shows and support local fighters, local promoters? Go support the websites that are covering this sport. You know, when I came up, we were able to make a living. You know, we had 4 partners in the site we started, Max Boxing, which came after House of Boxing. We were able to support ourselves and pay our writers and video people. Go support those sites, because I don't think many can do them full time anymore. So why don't you support your sites? Go support your fighters. Go support the local promoters, you know, by showing up and buying tickets. And, you know, I go to a UFC event, and that place is not completely filled, but I'm going to say 60 to 70% filled for the first fight. You know, there were 4-round kids fighting on boxing shows. They're fighting as they're opening the doors, okay? Go support your local guys. You know, look at MMA. Look at McGregor, man. There are people coming from Ireland to support him. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got this guy fighting next week on 215, Arjun Bhuva. This guy is going to have fans from India watching him. At whatever time it is in India, when he's on, they're going to be watching him. They support their people. You know, we've had sporadic cases in boxing. Look at Terrence Crawford in Nebraska. You know, he's a franchise there. That's a great thing. You know, you had back in the day, Baby Joe Macy in Buffalo. People came out and supported that guy. They would travel to watch him fight. And when he fought at home, they would pack the arena. Okay? Support your own. and for the media, why don't you write about something other than, you know, Oscar De La Hoya's latest rant or, you know, the whatever the big story is of the day. Why don't you write about some kid who's got a great story, who's struggling, who's, you know, maybe he doesn't have the right backing, but, you know, he's got a good story. He's on his way up. He's trying hard. I talked to the publicist. You know, my dirty secret, which I'm now giving out to the world, is someone pitches me on a story, I'm going to do it. If you followed my work at all, you know, you've seen that I've covered guys with 5-5 records or 3-10 records, 10-0, 2-0. I don't need to write about the superstars. There's a time and a place for that. But I'm trying to give some light to the guys coming up. One of the stories that I've done a lot on over the years is Gerald McClellan. He was a middleweight champion, was fighting for the super middleweight championship against Nigel Benn in London, and he loses that fight. Should have won it in the first round. He had two English-speaking guys with a French referee who didn't speak English. I could go on for days on that, but long story short, Gerald loses that fight. He gets brain damaged. To this day, he needs 24-hour care 7 days a week, which is the one taking care of him is his sister, Lisa, who's my hero for doing that. My own sister wouldn't do that for me. When he came into New York City, this had to be 2002 maybe, Teddy Blackburn, who was a friend of his for a long time, brought a lot of light to Gerald's story, was getting the Good Guy Award from the Boxing Writers Association of America. So they had the dinner, and Gerald came in, and I had done a bunch of stories on Gerald, so I got to know Lisa very well. And Lisa's like, you know, could you help with getting the word out, maybe getting some reporters here to do a story on Gerald? Sure, no problem. The night he came in, the only writer who showed up other than me, and I wasn't supposed to write that night, but my cat was supposed to be there. He took ill. He asked me, you know, can you write this? And I did it for The Independent in the UK. The only other writer who showed up was Wally Matthews. And a gentleman named Bernard Hopkins, he showed up. He wasn't writing, but he was there. He showed up to pay his respects. Next day was the day of the dinner, so all the writers were in the city. There was no excuse for them not to take a couple of steps across the street and see Gerald. I had guys saying, coming up to the floor and saying they wouldn't go in the room. They didn't want to see him. You know, oh, I don't want to see that. These are guys who are covering the sport. These are guys who had no problem sitting ringside at a Tyson or a De La Hoya fight and taking in, you know, all the big stuff that goes along with it. But they don't want to see the other side. They don't want to see what happens when things go wrong in that ring. And, you know, the reason for my rant is this is a big sport. There are a lot of bad things in the sport as well as good. Let's celebrate the good. Let's also shine a light on the bad to say, hey, this is what happens. This is the full spectrum of things. There are a lot more problems in boxing that need to be addressed before you start attacking the kids on the other street. Hey, MMA is not perfect. They got their own issues too.
Yeah.
But, you know, take care of your own house first before you start looking at the other ones, you know, and vice versa. You know, MMA fans could get out of their face too, you know, when it comes to boxing. And again, I tell people all the time, why do I have to choose? I like to see a fight, whether it's boxing, MMA, kickboxing, 2 a.m. outside the bar. If there's a fight, I'm going to watch it. Why do I have to choose? I got a DVR. I could tape one and watch one live.
It's very true. And I think what you say, it applies to MMA, also applies to pro wrestling in a lot of ways. There's a lot of, you know, a lot of cases there where people have to look at, you know, they have to look at people that need to be taken care of and all this stuff. So, yeah, I think very good advice for all those. One of the things I thought about the most this week, following everything with this past weekend, the promotion and all that, is that this almost felt like a I don't want to say a coronation of a new kind of combat sports, I don't want to say icon, but like figurehead, but with Mayweather transitioning out and, you know, Ronda Rousey has kind of her own place in all this, but if she's definitely retiring and not interested, and we'll kind of see what happens there. The combat sports, it seems, in every generation, era, you know, it needs somebody that people can say, even if they're not interested in it, that they know that that's the guy or that's the girl, that's the person that kind of represents what it means to be a pro fighter. And I think with this fight, I think McGregor really has filled that void now. And I don't know if this is part of the forethought and why UFC and the owners decided to kind of approve this or not, but that it turned out that, you know, with Mayweather on the way out, that combat sports needed someone to kind of fill that in, a guy that crossed over pop culture wise and people understood and could really get behind. And you have this Irish superstar that can talk the talk. He has the suits, he has the presence, and he wants to be a bigger star. And now he's here. And even with a loss, he's bigger than before. It just seemed to be that this was part of the plan. Bravo. But this fight really, Conor really got over to a place that I didn't even, I thought, in my heart of hearts, I knew as possible, but to see it kind of executed and everything, I just, you know, sky's really the limit for him and what happens next. I think he set himself up for some big things. And the guy's not even 30 years old yet. It's amazing.
Well, I guess the best way to respond to that was when the media tour was going on, my mother sent me a Facebook message. She wanted to bet on the fight. She's 77, and she knows nothing about fighting, but she knew about this fight. And you bring up a great point, because there hasn't been that guy for a long time. I don't think Mayweather captured the imagination. He was the best businessman, the best boxer, all that stuff. But to me, the last guy who really did that, the guy you could talk to about that guy on the street was Tyson. Mm. You know, everyone knew Ronda. You know, so she had that appeal as well. But you go anywhere, you look around, you know, when did Tyson win the title? 87. There's still people wearing Mike Tyson shirts. You know, so you got to think, well, you know, will people be wearing Floyd Mayweather shirts in 20 years? I don't know. But as far as a guy who has that potential to do that, yeah, McGregor's the guy. And I think he's that guy for all that you just said. You know, he's got all that outside stuff that people are drawn to. But I think the bottom line with this guy is, man, he wants to fight. And he doesn't care what discipline it is. He wants to fight. He was talking, you know, Megan O'Leary from UFC. She was working with Fox on Saturday night, and she did a great interview with him in the locker room after the fight. And he was breaking down what he needed to improve on. So while me and you and maybe 99% of the population would say, well, thanks for the $30 million, I'll see you later, this guy's plotting what's next. And I think all I needed to know about McGregor, and hey, you know what? He's a man like everybody else. You know, he's got his, I'm sure he's got his faults, and, you know, some people he rubs the wrong way, obviously. But after that Nate Diaz fight, the first one, he could have disappeared. He could have just said, "Nah, I'm a little beat up. I'm gonna take a trip to the hospital. Send you a statement later." He showed up at the press conference, did his thing, was gracious in defeat. For all the crappy talk, he was gracious in defeat, and he demanded a rematch, not at 155, which would be at his advantage, but at 170 again. Who does that? So, hey, I could do without the – I spoke to Leonard Elbe before the fight, and I told him, I said, man, I said, I'm 49 years old. I could do without all the trash talk and, you know, your mother this and your mother that and all that. That got off color at times from both guys. So I could do without all of that. I could do without all the extraneous stuff. But I love a guy or a girl who goes out there and just wants to fight, who just – they want to test themselves. They don't care about the wins or losses. I spoke to Evander Holyfield. I'm name-dropping here.
Yes.
I spoke to Evander Holyfield recently about his new promotional company, and he admires what's being done in MMA. He says, hey, you know, in MMA, a loss isn't the end of the road. A loss isn't, you know, oh, well, now you can't get on TV. Now you can't get a big contract. He says, because the best guys are fighting the best. He says, if you got the 10 best guys and they're fighting each other, he goes, five of those guys are going to lose, but, you know, any of those five guys could beat the five guys who won. And it's true, and that's what's great about what's gone on in MMA and in the UFC for years, that the best guys are fighting each other. And this is something that boxing, I think it's starting to catch on to again. You know, it lost it for a while. When I got into boxing when I was a kid in the 80s, the best were fighting the best. Then it dropped off. Then it was the era of the businessman. You know, what's best for business? And I get it. Don't get me wrong. This is a tough way to make a living. If you get a lot of money, get as much as you can and get the hell out because it's a rough sport. But now the best are fighting the best again. That's why we got a fight like Triple G and Canelo coming up. That's why we've had the fights we've had this year so far. Geez, look, I think it's with my calendar here. September 9th, we've got that Superfly tournament of all the best, you know, 115-pounders in the world, all great fighters and all in competitive fights. This is what the sport needs. And if McGregor's going to be the guy who's, you know, waving the flag for combat sports, I'm cool with that because this guy wants to fight.
So good transition, because now we looked at what could be next for Conor, and we don't know when, where, if. You know, I think those are questions that, you know, we know he's going to fight. And there seems to be no shortage of people that would love a piece of that financial pie that he likes to bake. So to me, it seemed to be pretty clear is that if it's going to be MMA, which I would assume that it would be, and I would hope that it would be, there's the what's the biggest fight and then what's the fight that the hardcores want to see, right? So I think there's the mindset of I'd love to see McGregor versus, you know, the winner of Ferguson versus Lee, Khabib Nurmagomedov, you know, one of these guys where it's like, let's get the best of the best in there. But after this weekend, and even going into this fight, I thought that he's going to put himself with a great performance, or, you know, one that is a strong performance like he had. He puts himself in a completely different mindset level and all this stuff. And my thought is that there's one guy that makes sense for that, and it's Nate Diaz, and it's the third to complete the trilogy. I think that, you know, he was there on Saturday night, and he's a known commodity. You know, he's never held the title, but he has this standing, you know, and you know it just as well as I do. He has this aura, this Diaz brothers aura, and the fact that he beat Conor, he'll have that first time, he'll have that forever. Obviously, McGregor winning the second one, and that could be, you know, that could be a huge fight and one that brings a lot of those people over that decide to plunk down $100 and watch on Saturday night. To me, that makes the most sense for his next fight. And I think Conor McGregor at this point is in interesting fight territory. I don't see him being a guy that we'll ever see in the UFC on like a 3-fight losing streak, just trying to kind of get back to it. I think he's financially, he's in a different position. I think he's like a, I won't say a corporation, but he's a much bigger thing now. And I think he's looking for guys that are going to get him interested, excited, and get the public excited to pay money. And also, you know, whatever comes next to him financially from UFC. What do you think is going to be next for him? Do you think it's going to be Diaz? Do you think it's going to be a Malignaggi? And he's going to go back to boxing? I mean, where do you think we're at here?
I definitely don't think it's a boxing match next. I think he did his thing. He made his point. Will he go back? Next year is another year. But as far as next, the fight I'd want to see is Diaz. I wanted to see it a week after the rematch. I just think some guys, when they get to a certain point, they've got to be in big fights. And I don't think there was a bigger fight for him in MMA after the rematch with Nate. But that one, you know, obviously he went on and fought Eddie and picked up the two titles. So that was a big deal. But as far as I was concerned, man, give me McGregor and Diaz, you know, every other month. I get in for free and I pay for that.
Right.
And I think time-wise, it makes sense. If Conor's saying, and he hasn't come out since the fight to say this, but I know before the fight he was saying he wanted to get in a UFC fight before the end of the year. If he does fight Nate, it's the perfect timing because Lee and Ferguson are fighting in October, and are you going to rush them back right into camp, basically, because you know they finish that fight, and if they're going to fight it at the end of the year in December, they'd have to jump right into camp. And I'm thinking neither of those guys want to do that. Maybe they do. Maybe they say, wow, if it's McGregor, I'd take him on a month's notice. But I think if you're going to make the fight right, if you're going to make it where both guys get a nice camp, full camp, the timing works out for those guys to settle their business in October, McGregor to fight Diaz the end of the year, and then early next year, you know, the winner of Ferguson Lee gets the winner of McGregor Diaz.
Yep, I would agree with that.
I could be a matchmaker. Look at that.
I like it. I like it. This is good stuff. We see you make the guys above you their jobs a lot easier. They're listening to the show. They get it. You know. Final question on Mayweather McGregor, and then we'll kind of round the bend with kind of just some UFC talk in general. With your lasting memory of this whole ride to from the when the fight was announced, what, 2.5 months ago to what we saw on Saturday and everything. If you years from now telling grandkids, they're like, tell me about this. What do you remember the most? What stands out to you the most?
The fact that I went to Barclays Center for the third stop of the press tour, mm-hmm. and that place was packed. I've been to fights there that didn't have that type of crowd. And as I waited, here's the thing. I've gone to a bunch of fights at Barclays Center. Never had to wait on a line that went down the block, which was the media entrance. That's how many media members showed up. And I'm seeing all these kids, and, you know, I'm 49, so a kid to me is like, you know, late teens, early 20s. I'm seeing these kids walk by, and they got Mayweather shirts on, they got McGregor shirts on, and I'm like, well, geez, I thought combat sports was dead. I thought it was just for us old guys, but no. Just to see the young people embracing this fight and, you know, whether they were McGregor fans or Mayweather fans, just knowing that they were fans and that they were willing to take time out of their day to show up and wait online and get tickets for a press conference, that's something I won't forget. I remember putting up a picture on Instagram, and I was like, wow, this many people showed up for a press conference. That's the lasting memory for me.
Yeah, I would say that still in 2017 with the general populace's attention being distracted everywhere by everything possible, that no matter what, that for just this, you know, this one night, it seemed like the world's attention was focused on this happening. And you look at the numbers, the expected numbers on pay-per-view, but also, you know, I was reading the story that Kevin did, Kevin Ioli did earlier today, being Tuesday, about the, you know, a couple industry people, or I don't know necessarily what they're called, but basically that 100 million people estimated to have pirated this fight between, you know, Saturday and Sunday, which is just worldwide, which is enormous. That's a huge number. It just, for whatever, it just, legal or not, this thing, this happening, captured the imagination. And if it could do it, it's almost like, is this the last big, huge, mega worldwide fight? You never know, because, you know, who knows what happens in the future. But that for a moment in time, you know, combat sports was, you know, the world came to us, and that was a nice feeling to have.
Yeah, and people actually listen to us for a change.
I know. It's amazing. It's amazing.
But it used to be, I used to tell my wife, you know, we'd go out somewhere and, you know, people, oh, what do you do? And it's like you tell them, oh, yeah, I cover, you know, boxing and mixed martial arts and roller derby. And they'd give you a look like you said, yeah, write about porn. it would have been probably an easier look if I said that. And it's just like, oh, well, thank you, Floyd. Thank you, Connor. You made people want to talk to me and actually respect my vocation for a minute.
It's a nice feeling. Very nice feeling. So we'll you know, kind of just look ahead here. You know, you mentioned busy schedules, and you have a, and all of us have a very busy schedule. This is a pretty packed last 4 months. This is a sprint to the finish. There is, I believe, an event, 16 events, give or take, for the currently the rest of the year.
Don't even tell me that. I don't even want to look.
Actually, I think it's more than that, but we'll just kind of focus on the short term. September is pretty packed. Obviously, we kind of ease back into things this weekend with an event in Netherlands with Stefan Struve return to action, the main event, and you know, a pretty you know, international fight laden card, as you might expect, and then obviously the pay per view the week after that with you know, Demetrius Johnson and Ray Borg. That fight obviously discussed for a long time for different reasons. The you know, women's featherweight title on the line, and Nunez as well coming back. You know, a lot of stuff kind of coming up, but for those that, you know, maybe looking for something to watch, obviously, this weekend and kind of get back in the, you know, the UFC swing of things after a long absence, what should they look for on this Saturday's card, this weekend's card?
Hey, Josh, you know all I care about at this point?
Sleep.
Is November.
November. Okay.
November. November in Norfolk, Virginia.
Mm.
Joe Lauzon versus Clay Guida and Matt Brown versus Diego Sanchez on the same card. I tweeted it the other day. I don't know if my heart can take it. I cannot wait for that card. So much good stuff between now and then, but I've already circled November 11th on the calendar. I think that's my sleeper pick card of the year.
Really?
Already.
Well, tell me why. Is just the tough one, kind of just that emotional tie there. What stands out? I mean, because people that have listened to this show before know I love crossroads fights, and I love fights between veterans that have been there. Matt Brown, Diego Sanchez, that's one of them, and Clay Guida versus Joe Lauzon, that's another. Is that kind of what you're feeling?
My two favorite fights of all time, and I've seen a lot of fights, my two favorite UFC fights of all time, were Sam Stout and Spencer Fisher, the rematch, mm-hmm. and Randy Couture and Minotauro Nogueira. And both of those fights, think about it, in the great scheme of things, didn't mean anything. Neither of them were for a title. Neither of those guys were top contenders. Fisher and Stout, solid contenders their whole careers, but they were never in the title picture. But those guys, they put it all together that night, and they went for it as if they were fighting for 10 titles. Nogueira and Couture, both at the tail end of their careers, they weren't in the title picture anymore, both legends of the game. But I don't know if you remember the lead-in to that, but people were like, oh, man, why do we got to see this?
Mm-hmm.
And I always compared it to the thrill in Manila between Ali and Frazier. Obviously, it wasn't for the heavyweight title. Obviously, it wasn't the fight Ali and Frazier had in that those guys both left something of themselves in the ring that night. But you saw Couture and Nogueira go at it like young guys again. It was like they hit the fountain of youth that night, and you saw all the best parts of their game over the course of those 15 minutes, and they dug back, and you could see the greatness. You always hear that phrase in combat sports, oh, the great ones always have one great fight left. That was the last great fight for those guys. So my vision of a great fight card, my vision of a great fight may be different than most. So I look at Brown and Sanchez. Hey, both those guys have been on a rough road as of late. Guida and Lozon, Lozon's had, an up and down last couple years. Guida, has definitely been on the downside, but man, he came back to lightweight and looked great against Derek Koch. These are guys who, I think when the bell rings, well, the bell don't ring, but when the, when the door closes, I think they're going to find something that, maybe they haven't found against other opponents lately. I think we're going to see something special out of all four of those guys.
Yep, I am looking at this card up and down right now, and this is, I would agree. I'm excited for it now, too. This is perfect. And that was what one of my final questions was going to be, was a hidden gem to go find on UFC Fight Pass for people, and he gave us two. Sam Stout versus Fisher 2, and also Randy Couture versus Big Nog. That was, oh, my God, I have to go find that fight. That was you were at, everything you said was spot on about that fight. That was one of those that, again, going into it was kind of like, oh boy, these get like older guys. They just groaning.
You're like, oh man, I hope they don't get hurt.
Right.
I hope they don't pull a ligament walking to the octagon because they're both old guys. And I don't know, man. I still remember it was in Portland. Found a great Italian place. I don't remember the name. There was Powell's Bookstore and Couture and Nogueira. Mm. It was the perfect weekend. But, if anyone's seen the books, the UFC Encyclopedia or the Visual History or, any of the lists we do on UFC.com, when it comes to all-time fights, I will always find a home for those two. People are probably annoyed of me talking about them, but those two always find a place.
So Sam Stout, Spencer Fisher 2, Randy Couture, Big Nog. Go find those fights and Fight Pass and tweet at Tom to let him know what you thought of those. And if there's anything that you didn't like about them, don't say anything because we don't want to ruin anyone's
day. Yeah, because I'll just block you then. Now I don't want to be your friend anymore.
So before we let you go, obviously you're doing a lot of work at a lot of different places. Want to give you a chance to plug where people can follow you on social media, and also what stuff you have coming up that people should check out. The floor is yours.
Oh, man. UFC.com. We've got Ultimate Fighter starting Wednesday. So this Wednesday, it probably will have aired already, but we're into Tough 26, which is always a bad thing for me because when I interview all the fighters, I want everybody to win. Bunch of great fighters on this season. We got crown a flyweight champion. We'll have profiles on everybody on UFC.com. We're finishing up Dana's series tonight, which is Tuesday. But we've been interviewing and featuring the winners, the guys who and gals, if there is one tonight, who get the contracts. So we've been talking to those folks. We've got the Rotterdam show coming up this week, so plenty of content on that. Then we're into 215, so that's the UFC stuff. Boxingscene.com, Ring Magazine, Boxing News Magazine, Gotham Girls Roller Derby, and Medium, KO63 Music at Medium.com. And if anyone wants to know what KO63 means and why I named it that, I couldn't think of a better name for the music site, so I went with the old KO63. 63 is how many seconds I got knocked out in the Golden Gloves in 1997. So that's that.
I like it. I like it. Well, we have so much more to talk about next time. So you're definitely coming back as a return guest. So hopefully this worked for you as well. We have, I wrote down things like Dave Meltzer stories, Oliver Kopp stories, and all this. And, yeah, everything else will be going on. So I'm already looking forward to our next talk, Tom.
Josh, I'm going to leave you with one on Dave Meltzer, something, maybe a little known fact about Dave Meltzer. We were in Canada, and it was one of the UFC shows, and we all went to have lunch, and I had my Gotham Girls roller derby shirt on, and Dave told me chapter and verse about the early days of roller derby. If you thought he knew wrestling, he knows roller derby just as much. Bet you didn't know that about Dave.
Well, actually, you know, as a phone that's worked for the site for a long time and also listening to Wrestling Observer Radio, he can randomly pull stuff out like nobody else. And yeah, I have heard him talk about roller derby before, and it is like he's talking about Hulk Hogan. Like he's just this and this and this and this. It's like, my God.
I think Dave knows everything.
He certainly knows a lot about a lot of unique things. That is absolutely for sure. So we'll get some.
He told me, and I never knew this, because the roller derby back then, that was scripted. It was almost like pro wrestling. You know, the roller derby today, it's all legit and, you know, a real sport. But Sugar Ray Robinson's son was a star in roller derby, an early roller derby, which I never knew.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
The things that Dave knows that he educates us all about, right?
Yes, Dave. Whenever I feel like I'm overworked, I feel like I've written too much, I pick up the newsletter and I say, oh, okay, I could shut up now. Dave is my hero.
Yeah, it certainly is. Certainly is. And you can follow Tom on Twitter, TGERBASI. And Tom Gerbasi, thanks so much for joining Josh Nason's Punch this week. Looking forward to having you again. And enjoy a busy 4 months. I won't tell you how many events are left, though.
Did you just say enjoy it? I enjoy fight night. The rest I could do without.
All right. Big thanks to Tom Gerbasi for spending all that time. You can obviously follow him on Twitter. Let him know you heard the show and watch those two fights that he recommended. I'm glad he brought those up because I was going to ask him. And those are two excellent fights. I'm going to go check those out this weekend as well. Let's see. There was a Bellator show this past weekend. I did not see it. It completely got overlooked. And I completely forgot it happened until I saw there was a Bellator show on the DVR. So I got to catch up on that. And then also, as I briefly mentioned, there is a UFC event, in this weekend. Stefan Struve is fighting in the main event and, you know, a few other interesting names on the show. But, yeah, we're still kind of like getting past, Mayweather McGregor. With all that, if you did not see the fight, or if you may have seen it in a slightly non-legal version, maybe on a computer screen or a phone, want to kind of see the real thing. A reminder that it comes up, they're going to show the fight on Showtime this Saturday night, I believe 8 or 9 o'clock. Check the guide for that, but they always show the major pay-per-views, the week after on either Showtime or HBO, depending on who carries the fight. So if you want to see Mayweather McGregor in all of its HD glory, you can see it this Saturday on Showtime. And let's see, my voice is going to hell, so I'm going to call it good for this week. Thank you guys for listening. Again, thanks to you to Tom, and we'll see you next week. This has been Josh Nason for Josh Nason's Punch-Out. Until next time, insert catchphrase here.